Like listening to podcasts just like this one from the team at Which? Well, we've got some good news. All our podcasts are now available to listen to on YouTube and YouTube Music. So whether you like listening to Get Answers, Which Shorts, or Which Money, all episodes can now be listened to directly on YouTube or through the YouTube Music app. To find them, just search for the podcast you'd like to listen to. YouTube's additional functionality also means that you can now read along with subtitles as you listen. Don't panic though, all Which podcasts are still available to listen to elsewhere too. So wherever you listen, we'll see you soon.
When life gives you questions, Which? Get answers.
Welcome to the Which Money Podcast, your weekly hit of money news and personal finance hacks to help make you better off. I'm your host, Lucia Ariano, and here's what's coming up this week.
You can think you don't need an ISA because you're not getting enough interest or enough returns to exceed those tax-free allowances, but you don't know what's going to happen in the future.
It's not generally the household names that are offering you the best rates. It's typically these smaller startup banks that are a bit hungrier for business that offer you the juicier rates.
This week on the podcast, as we approach the start of the new tax year, we're talking about ISAs. They're a tax-efficient way of saving your money, but there's a lot of different types of ISAs out there with different rules and different rates of return and risk. So what's the best one for you? Well, to bring us up to speed on all of this, as well as the big changes coming in from April, I'm very pleased to say I'm joined by a stellar cast today, Which Money podcast regular Megan Thomas, who is our investment ISA expert at Which Money, and we're also joined by Laura Suter, Director of Personal Finance at AJ Bell, and another familiar voice on the show. Welcome, both of you.
Hiya.
Hi.
Well, shall we start from the top then? First things first, in a nutshell, what is an ISA and what are the different types out there? And also, why is it important that we're talking about them now, just before the end of the tax year?
Yeah, so an ISA is a way of saving money without having to pay any tax on either the interest or the investment returns of the money in that ISA. So during each tax year, which, as you mentioned, runs April to April, you can save up to £20,000 into an ISA. And at the minute, there are four types of ISA. So cash ISAs, stocks and shares ISAs, innovative finance ISAs, and lifetime ISAs. And then within that, you can get some junior versions of those types of ISAs.
Okay, lots there. Well, we'll go into some of those in more detail later in the show. And Laura, can we bring in now the tax-free allowance that we get on normal savings? It's also known as the personal savings allowance. How does this work?
Yeah, so this is actually a really interesting thing and actually led to the decline in popularity, particularly of cash ISAs. And this effectively means that if you're a basic rate taxpayer, you can earn £1,000 of interest on your cash savings each year before you have to pay tax on it. For a higher rate taxpayer, so someone who's paying income tax at 40%, they get a £500 allowance before they have to pay tax. And then if you're an additional rate taxpayer, you get no allowance. And so when this was introduced, it meant that for the majority of people, this was enough to cover their cash savings interest, and so they didn't need to use an ISA. But that has all changed. Interest rates have gone up, which means we're all getting a bigger return on our cash savings, and more people are moving up through those tax brackets, and so we're seeing more and more people hit that personal savings allowance and therefore pay tax on their cash interest.
And so in terms then of who an ISA is best for, how much do you need to have in normal savings roughly until you start paying tax on your interest? Because I'm assuming it's at this point really then that you should be considering opening an ISA.
Exactly. So it depends on your income tax level. But yeah, if we think about £20,000and that earning interest of about 5%, then you're going to start hitting that limit. So each individual needs to look at it. And there's some clever ways around it in terms of you can share some savings with your partner. So if your partner hasn't hit their limit, you could spread the money across yourselves. But yeah, you really need to be looking at what you're getting on your cash savings and then whether you're likely to hit that limit. And it's not just now as well, it's in the future. So if we think, oh, I'm likely to save a decent amount more next year, even if we think interest rates are going to drop a bit, it might be that you start hitting that limit. So you can almost future-proof yourself by using a cash ISA today and using up your allowance today.
So it's definitely something you need to have in mind to kind of future-proof yourself, as you say. Well, let's get a bit deeper into the two main types of ISA. So one of them being investment ISA. Megan, how do you use them? What sort of investments can you make with them?
So the main ISA that investors will be interested in is a stocks and shares ISA, though you can also invest in an innovative finance ISA, but that's much less common. So if you're choosing your investments yourself, instead of having a financial advisor choose them for you, you'll sign up to a stocks and shares ISA through an investment platform. Generally, you'll be charged a fee, though that's not always true. But when you sign up with the stocks and shares ISA, you'll be investing in, you know, investment funds, stocks and shares, as the name suggests, investment trusts, exchange-traded funds, and bonds and gilts. If you're wanting to invest, say, in property or, you know, a luxury investment, something like that, well, that won't be covered within an ISA. Some alternative investments are available, as I mentioned, through innovative finance ISAs, most notably peer-to-peer lending, where you lend to borrowers and they pay back with interest. But this is very risky and has kind of declined a lot in recent years.
And choosing the right provider, that's very important here, isn't it? What different services do different providers offer?
Yeah, there's huge differences in what's on offer, not just the number of investments available, but, you know, the level of knowledge or experience that a provider might expect of you. So it's quite a personal experience choosing which platform's right for you. Luckily, we've just launched our reviews of the platform, so you can have a look at what's on offer, you know, how many investments, crucially the fees charged, because there's a big difference from platform to platform in how much they charge you. You could save actually hundreds by switching from the most expensive ISA provider to the least in a year. So we've heard from more than 3,000 investors and put together an analysis on fees on 17 platforms to help you find the right place for your stocks and shares ISA. And members can have a look at which.co.uk/platforms for that.
We'll pop a link in the description of today's show as well. I mean, it all sounds like a bit of a minefield, doesn't it? For anyone who has never touched, even thought about investing before, it's kind of quite an accessible way of doing it, it feels like. But then, you know, you're talking about all these different types of investment. Are you interested in investing in property or, you know, all these different areas? Laura, I mean, what would you say to anyone who's considering it but completely new to investing?
And I think that encapsulates so many people. And I think a few of the misconceptions around it are, firstly, that you need to know absolutely everything day one before you start investing. And that isn't the case. And the second is that you need to have thousands of pounds saved up before you start investing. And actually, you can start investing from £25 a month through a regular investment service on a lot of platforms. So it really is something where you can start out little, build that money up, learn a bit more about investing as you go. And there are so many guides for first-time investors that help with things like jargon busting, because we know the investment industry loves an acronym and a tricky phrase. So there's some good guides to that and to how to get started, even down to the basics of what is a fund, what is a bond, what is a share. So there's so much helpful information out there, and of course, Which provides that as well, to help people really get started. But don't feel like you need to know everything and have loads of money to get started investing.
I suppose the pull for a lot of people towards stocks and shares ISA might be that your chances of getting a better rate of return, you know, is there a kind of average there? Or obviously there's some risk attached to it, but what would you say around that?
Yeah, so there is some risk attached to it, and there's no denying that. But if you look over the long term, stocks and shares investment markets have always outperformed cash, particularly once we take into account inflation. So cash is very safe. It's very great for short term spending needs or for that emergency savings part. But over history has shown us that it's terrible at keeping up with inflation, and it's not going to give you that extra return. So it's really about thinking, what are my short-term needs and what money do I want to take no risk with? That's great for cash. But for my longer-term savings needs and where I want to get a bit more return, that's where investing can be really great. And the difference that it can make over a long period is huge. And so when we think about investing, to come back to your question of kind of the returns each year, we tend to think about 5% a year returns after charges is what we model a lot of things on. Now, obviously, cash at the moment is going through a great period and you can get that on cash, but over the long term, cash gets nowhere near that. So it's definitely worth considering in terms of maximising those returns over the long term.
Well, let's talk about cash ISAs a bit more then, shall we? Before we get into the rates, which I am interested to hear after we've just talked about rates, but can you tell us what kinds of cash ISAs are out there?
So cash ISAs, sometimes I think people get a bit bamboozled by the ISA term. Mm. They're essentially the same as other savings accounts that you would have. So you can have an easy access version, you can have fixed rate accounts and over different terms. It's just an ISA version of that. We sometimes call it an ISA wrapper, but that's another bit of lovely industry jargon.
Yeah, which actually sounds very friendly, doesn't it? But it is still a bit bamboozling.
Essentially, all it means is that the money in that account is tax-free in comparison to a very similar equivalent savings account that you would get from the same provider. So there's a huge range out there depending on how long you want to lock your money up for.
And so the big question then, what are the best cash ISA rates out there at the moment? And how do they compare to the top normal savings accounts?
So there used to be a huge gap between ISA and non-ISA accounts. But at the moment, you can get 5.1% is the top easy access ISA account. And that is from CHIP. And then if you fix your money, you can get a little bit more. So for a 1-year fix, you can get 5.25% from Virgin Money. So a decent return. And then over 2 years, if you wanted to fix for longer, the rates actually drop. And that's because the interest rate expectations over that 2-year period are that they're going to drop over that point. So that's 4.7%, but from a variety of providers. So Oak North, Close Brothers and UBL. Now, there are some different names in there, and it's the same as what we see in the normal cash savings market, which is it's not generally the household names that are offering you the best rates. It's typically these smaller startup banks that are a bit hungrier for business that offer you the juicier rates. So definitely research a provider before you sign up to it. Check that it's got the right protections, that it's registered with the regulator before you leap in. But if you wanted a household name, you could definitely go for that if you wanted the security, but you're going to end up with a lower rate often.
And how does that compare then to the best savings rates, normal savings accounts?
Yeah, so you can get slightly more with non-ISA accounts. So you can get 5.2% on an easy access account versus that 5.1% ISA account that I talked about. And you can get ever so slightly more on a 1-year fix. So 5.27% rather than 2.5%. So actually, they've really equalised. Previously, those rates were much more out of kilter. We are, you know, nearing the end of the tax year, and that's when a lot of ISA providers get quite hungry for business, so they offer better rates. So it's definitely a case of get rates now if you want to lock in at a decent rate, because we are expecting them to drop.
I'm genuinely quite impressed by that. Well, in a moment, we'll be back with more on this, the changes coming in this year you need to know about, and a few specialist types of ISAs and plenty more.
Last minute escapes. In the sun. What is the best airline? Ooh, the worst airline. What happens if my flight is delayed or cancelled? Would I be put on a new flight? Or would I be refunded? What if it takes me days to get home? Benefits of a UK staycation.
When life gives you questions, get answers at which.co.uk.
Now, there were some major changes to ISA rules announced in the spring by the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, and they'll be coming into effect from April this year. Megan, can you give us the headlines?
Yeah, so some that will come into effect in April that were mentioned a bit earlier were the changes to being able to pay how many ISAs you can pay into of the same type in a year. So from April, you'll be able to both open and pay into more than one of the same type of ISA each year. So you can actually open 2 stocks and shares ISAs in a single year, which you weren't able to do before, and pay into both of them. So you'll still have the same £20,000 allowance, but you can spread that differently. And as well as opening new ISAs, you'll now be able to do a partial transfer of a stocks and shares ISA. So what would have happened before is if you wanted to switch providers, you would have had to move the whole portfolio, but maybe you're happy, but you want a little bit of a change. So you'll be able to do that going forward in April.
What does this mean in practice then? I mean, Laura, is this something people would want? Is this something you think people should do to have multiple of the same type of ISA?
So I'm really in two minds about it. The fact that you can have multiple of the same type of ISA, I think, is really beneficial in the cash market, because it means that you can shop around for different cash rates. If you've picked a cash ISA in a tax year, it doesn't mean that you're tied to that cash ISA for the entire of the tax year. If another better rate comes up with a different provider and you haven't used up that ISA allowance, then you can select that other one and maximize maximise your return. But what it does do, and when we're explaining these things and having to explain the detail of them, is add even more complexity to the ISA space. And actually, we know that if ISAs were simpler, they were much easier to understand, then more people would engage with them because they wouldn't feel so daunted by the small print and the nitty-gritty of it. So I think there's some good customer outcomes on one side, good outcomes for savers, but it does make it a bit more complicated. And it means when we're talking about ISAs, we're having to say, oh, and you can do this, but only on this one and in this way. And I think that does make it trickier for those complete newcomers that we talked about earlier to understand.
So just something to bear in mind if you're in the market for a cash ISA and you want to shop around, really.
Yeah.
And can we talk a bit about what's called the British ISA? We haven't been given a date it's going to be available yet, but what do we know about it, Megan?
What we know so far is it'll give you an extra £5,000 to invest specifically in UK equities. What we don't know is any more detail really than that, like where you'll be able, which providers will offer it, anything like that.
And that's an extra £5,000 tax-free?
Yes, on top of the £20,000 allowance each year. There are some limitations to this. I don't think most people do use up that full £20,000 allowance in a year. I mean, I don't have £20,000 a year to spend extra on investments. I imagine most people don't. But those who do might find a lot of benefit from this. But also, as Laura mentions, it's another ISA in a pretty complex landscape. So that might cause some issues.
And Laura, what do you think? Is the British ISA a good idea?
No. Put simply, I think it just adds more complexity, like Megan said. And actually, if we look at the intention of the British ISA from the government, it's to boost investment in UK companies. So it's to encourage more people like us to invest our ISA money in UK companies. Then if we look at that tiny proportion of people that already max out that £20,000 ISA allowance each year, and then the proportion of those that will use this new British ISA and invest in UK companies, the actual impact that that's going to have on the stock market and on UK companies is so tiny in comparison to the scale of the market that I just can't see it meaningfully achieving that objective. And to get there, we create more complexity in the system. So I think it'll be interesting to see the final details of it, and also if it does see the light of day. So we know that there's a consultation going on until June, but we also know that there's a general election coming this year. This may not be a policy that's kept in place if the government does change to Labour. So I think lots of question marks around it at the moment.
Well, if more voices like yours are speaking up, perhaps it won't come into effect later in the year. We'll have to watch that space. But speaking of complexity in the market, well, there's another ISA, or the LISA. And this is something that we've talked about a lot on the podcast. So it's the LISA, or Lifetime ISA. And it's meant to help you plan for retirement or to get on the housing ladder. Laura, how does this work? And is it a no-brainer if you're saving for your first home or retirement? Or are there some risks that you should consider?
So you'll be pleased to hear I'm much more positive on this one.
I thought you might be, actually.
I think this one, I agree, is a bit complex. There's some kind of caveats to it, and it only applies to certain people. But if you're in one of the camps who's eligible to use it, it's such a great way of boosting your deposit savings, for example. So the way this works is you can pay in up to £4,000 a year. And for every £4 you put in, the government adds a pound to that pot of money. So you pay in £4,000, the government will add £1,000 to it. It's only available for people to open between the ages of 18 and 39. So if you've hit your 40th birthday or beyond, you can't apply for the account. And the money can only be used to buy a first property, like you said, or for retirement. And it's that first property one that's really, really valuable, I think. If you're in a position where you could save £4,000 each year, then you're getting £1,000 of free money towards that deposit savings, which is hugely valuable. You can carry on paying in until you turn 50, and there are cash and investment options. So you can pick which one works for you depending on your timescale and the amount of risk that you want to take. But the big caveat is that if you use it for any other purpose other than buying your first property or at the age of 60, so when you're coming to retire, then you will pay an exit penalty on the money. Now, this is intended to claw back the government bonus that they've given you, but actually the kind of clunky way that they implemented it means that it takes back a bit of your money as well. So it's not something that you should be seeing as kind of an easy access savings account. You should have that money separately, not in a Lifetime ISA, but it should be kind of your ring fence deposit savings money, or your money to save for retirement.
You do have to be quite sure that's what you're saving for.
Exactly. You can get the money back. It's not completely locked up like a pension, for example, but you will pay that penalty on your money, which no one wants to lose some of their savings.
And there's just one more type of ISA that I'd like to mention today, and that's the junior ISAs. So are these something that parents and guardians, it's worth them looking into?
Yeah, so these can be opened for children under the age of 18. You can have a cash version and a stocks and shares version. You can pay in up to £9,000 a year, which is a very generous limit. I can't imagine many parents having that spare, particularly if they've got multiple children. Mm-hmm. And that money is locked up under the child's name until they turn 18, and then it converts into a normal ISA and they can access the money. So it's a very good way of saving for your children. While parents have to open the accounts, once it's open, grandparents or family members or friends even can pay into that account. So it's a good way of, if you're stumped for Christmas presents or birthday presents, or if grandparents want to give the child some money, they know that it's ring fenced in their name up until the age of 18, and it can grow over that time. So it's a really good option, I think, for parents who want to put away a bit of money for their kids.
Okay, and finally then for today, a chance for you both to give some final top tips. What advice would you like to leave our listeners with today? Any final pros and cons?
So I think, firstly, it's to not be overwhelmed by some of the lingo and the jargon around this and not think that ISAs sound a bit complicated and they're not for me. Hopefully we've picked apart a lot of that today and highlighted some of the ones that could be really useful. I think secondly, it's thinking about that lifetime ISA. If you're saving for a first home and you're fit in that age category and you know that that money can be locked away, then it's really worth looking at that and looking at whether that account works for you, because everyone loves free money, don't they?
Oh, what's not to like, really? Usually we say that phrase, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Well, in this case, I mean, don't shoot me for saying it, but it does sound like it's definitely true. And Megan, what would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And I would just add that I think you can think you don't need an ISA because you're not getting enough interest or enough returns to exceed those tax-free allowances. But that you don't know what's going to happen in the future, especially with investments. You could have the best year of your investing life, and then all of a sudden it is a problem and you haven't sort of accounted for that, and you could have done, and it wouldn't have caused you any extra issues. So I think it's worth looking at long term as well as your immediate circumstances.
Cautious note. Well, it's been so good to have you both on the show today. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, a huge thank you again to Laura and Megan for coming on the show today, and to you for listening to this week's episode of the Which Money Podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please do hit subscribe to make sure you catch our new episodes as soon as they drop. For daily money news and advice, you can find us on social media at Which Money and online at which.co.uk/money. And we also have a free money newsletter, which is delivered to your inbox every Monday. To sign up, visit which.co.uk/money newsletter. This episode of the Which Money Podcast was written by me, Lucia Ariano, alongside Rob Lily Jones, produced by me and Adrian Bradley, and edited by James Rowe.
Want to stay ahead of fraudsters and across the latest scams? At Which, we helped prevent an estimated £1.8 million in scam losses last year, thanks to our Scam Alert newsletter. And each week we provide more information on the latest scam activity, helping protect you, your family, and your friends. Stay in the know and avoid falling victim to scammers by joining over 450,000 people already signed up to our free Which Scam Alerts. To join them, head to which.co.uk/scamalert and sign up today.